left her back, cleavage, shoulders, and arms exposed, while the hem of her skirt barely reached her knees. She also wore bracelets, sandals, rings, a tiara, and several other accessories, each of them fashioned from precious metals and inlaid with sparkling gems. Her right hand held onto a matching, stately staff while the other stretched out towards the creature. Her red lips parted as she let out an authoritative voice that echoed into eternity.
"Greetings, creature."
Motes of white light gathered in Teresa's open palm as she spoke.
"And goodbye."
Part 6.
"Whoa! Whoa, whoa, whoa!"
Kira yelled while waving her hand in a panic.
"Let's not get hasty, Miss Goddess of Justice, ma'am."
Teresa raised an eyebrow while looking down at the creature in every way imaginable. She was a little surprised and slightly delighted that her guest recognized her so quickly. Taking this as a prompt to plead its case, the catgirl-shaped monster smiled sweetly and tilted its head to the side in an undeniably charming fashion.
"You're a reasonable deity, ma'am. Surely we can work something out,"
she offered.
"Divine smite!"
However, the reasonable deity merely scoffed at the offer and unleashed her wrath without another thought. A deluge of holy energy poured out of her hand, drowning the spot in which Boxy stood. At first glance, the column of white light was extremely reminiscent of the Hero of the Hammer's signature skill, Justice from Above. However, there were two key differences. First, it would annihilate the target without any regard for things such as justice or evil. Second, this magic was dozens of times larger in scope and strength than the watered-down version that Teresa's hero had invoked. In short, the astral projection caught in its wake would be obliterated without a doubt. With the vile creature's soul gone, its unconscious body back in the material realm would never wake up. Teresa sighed deeply as the unnecessarily long downpour of magic bombarded Boxy's spot over the course of several seconds. She held such high hopes for Bernard and was certain he was finally going to be the one. Her obsession with him ran so deep that she had resurrected him, knowing full well she would draw the ire of her peers, especially Mortimer. Being on the shit list of the God of Death and Commerce was never a good thing, even for a fellow deity. Teresa managed to deflect the Pantheon's displeasure by accusing that conniving nitwit Hillary of purposefully targeting her hero by detonating his dungeon core at Monotol. Whether that was or wasn't the case didn't matter, as she nevertheless succeeded in placating the other divinities. However, her current actions were utterly inexcusable. The goddess of truth and justice had interfered in such a direct and egregious manner that it would be centuries before she heard the end of it. Teresa knew this full well, but in her grief she no longer cared about those busybodies in the Pantheon. She lost her precious hero yet again. Worse still, she couldn't even bring him back to life this time around. Bernard Sampson's death was decided in a clash of fate. It was a sacred dueling rite that was invoked whenever two heroes stood in direct conflict to one another, with the victor often claiming a fraction of the loser's divine gifts as their own. Not that a clash of fate had to be resolved exclusively through violence and death. The duel could take on any form so long as it ended with a clear and undisputed winner. A battle of wits and wordplay, a contest of craftsmanship, or even a foot race across the continent were all perfectly reasonable alternatives. Even armed conflict needed not necessarily end with lethal force so long as one side submitted to the other. It was also possible for the whole affair to result in a draw should both sides agree to it. However, the clash of fate between justice and chaos couldn't have ended any other way. That malicious box did not have the habit of sparing its enemies, nor could Bernard feasibly stand against its monstrous might once his justice from above failed. His death was all but certain the instant that mockery of a duel began. Worse still, the terms and conditions of the contest were absolute, enforced by the combined divine authority of the entire Pantheon. No single god had the power to directly or indirectly interfere with a clash, and that included undoing the outcome after the fact. Teresa had thus been forced to watch as that hideous, contemptuous creature toyed with and ultimately murdered her hero, sending his soul directly into Mortimer's clutches. Teresa shed more than a few tears during that time, since it was highly unlikely a man of Bernard's caliber would appear anytime soon. She saw the potential within him to become the greatest hero of the hammer that ever lived, someone who could finally make her wishes come true. Yet, his journey was tragically cut short a second time by the same culprit, a truly despicable monster that could not even say good morning without lying twice. And so Teresa's hate boiled over, causing her to drag Boxy into her realm so that she could wipe its foul existence from the world with great vengeance and furious anger. Or at least, that had been her intent. However, when her divine smite finally ran its course, the goddess felt a strange oddity within her domain. She glanced at the platform where the shapeshifter had been summoned. The semi-solid cloud had been dispersed by her merciless attack, and though she saw no sign of the creature, something was definitely down there. It was a black and circular pool of magical energy about a meter wide that swirled around in a slightly hypnotic fashion. A few moments later, Boxy was violently ejected from its own storage. It flew up into the air, landing roughly on a nearby chunk of cloud. The monster had reverted to its base hilt creeper form and was coughing violently, launching spurts of thick, dark red blood from its vertical mouth. Hiding inside its own pocket dimension was how Boxy had evaded Bernard's judgment from above just a minute ago. It had no guarantee that the same trick would work against the guy's sugar mama, but it didn't exactly have a lot of options. Thankfully, it succeeded, though at a price. Boxy dipping inside its own storage skill was a grievous misuse of the ability. It was the magical equivalent of putting a bag inside itself, and the otherwise stable vortex of magic reacted badly as it tried to resolve that paradox. The feedback effect the monster suffered as a result caused its body to rip itself apart from the inside. The backlash was negligible and easily disguised during the clash since it only lasted a moment, allowing it to play the thing off as Kira miraculously dodging the ability. However, Teresa's version lasted for almost 5 seconds straight. Boxy suffered so much feedback damage during that time that its brilliant evasive maneuver almost turned into a form of suicide. Almost, but not quite. The monster laughed wickedly while sputtering up blood. It stared right at the befuddled goddess's face and split its visage into a truly monstrous cross smile.
"Excuse me, your divine bitchiness,"
it brazenly taunted her.
"I do believe you missed."
"Will you just fucking die?"
Outraged beyond reason by that cackling, mocking, downright blasphemous laughter, Teresa swung her arm down in a dramatic arc. The motion unleashed a second divine smite upon the shapeshifter, which Boxy evaded exactly like the first one. Once back in its pocket dimension, it quickly reached for one of the rejuvenation potions it had in stock and ate it in one bite, crystal vial and all. What followed was the wholly indescribable sensation of its astral body rapidly tearing itself apart while the alchemical miracle in a bottle stitched it back together. The latter outpaced the former by a significant margin, allowing it to endure until the repeat performance ended. Unfortunately, this momentary respite only delayed the inevitable. Boxy had no idea how it could win from this position. It was surviving for the moment, but another divine smite would surely come down on it the instant it popped out of storage. There were only so many times it could undertake the evasive maneuver before it was incapacitated by potion sickness. Furthermore, it had no means of escaping Teresa's divine space, and even if it did, she'd just drag it back in again. The shapeshifter was utterly and completely doomed. Nevertheless, it refused to give up. No matter how hopeless its situation, no monster would go out without thrashing wildly until the bitter end, and Boxy was the most monstrous monster that ever monstered. Now, The shapeshifter had no idea whether killing or even harming a deity was possible in general, let alone inside their own godly domain. But it knew how to find out. Wherever or whatever this space was, it still followed the same rules and principles as the endless white room Jonathan had invited it to a few times before. It knew from experience it was a place where both spells and skills were usable. Thus, it stood to reason that magic items would function as well. So, if Boxy could use all of those, then it had a venue through which it could at least fight back. It found a great deal of satisfaction in the thought of giving Teresa a black eye before it got annihilated, something of a final fuck you to the goddess of sore losers. When the opportunity presented itself, Boxy leapt out of its interdimensional hidey hole yet again, though this time it brought a little something-something out with it. The monster was still mostly clueless as to what it was going to do, but it felt confident it wouldn't accomplish anything by its lonesome. That was why it had popped back into Teresa's reality while firmly clutching the demonic skull-headed staff known as Voidcaller. It secured its footing as best it could before Teresa could strike a third time and activated the artifact-grade item's unique ability to instantly call forth one of its familiars. A 3-meter-tall door made out of seething crimson energy appeared out of thin air, and a certain thoroughly disoriented muscle head stumbled out of the beyond.
Ugh. Boss?
Cora groaned.
Where are... Whoa!
The fiend wasn't given the chance to even get her bearings before Boxy wrapped a tentacle around her waist and flung her straight at Teresa's face with all its might. The shapeshifter then ducked back inside its storage as yet another downpour of radiant annihilation bombarded its position, barely missing Cora in the process. The demon had no idea where she was or what was going on, but she recognized who she hurtled towards. That was all the information she needed to figure out what to do next. She twisted her body around in midair just in time to deliver a full forced dropkick to the distracted bitch's face. More specifically, her nose. Correction, her broken nose. Teresa let out a rather unladylike scream, causing her to flinch away and lose her concentration. With the divine smite interrupted well ahead of schedule, Boxy departed the pocket dimension post-haste. It really didn't have much choice in the matter either, as it surely couldn't survive another full encore performance. It had more rejuvenation potions, yes, but it was already on the brink of passing out from potion sickness.
Reality Slash!
Crackling with the destructive energy from power overwhelming, the monster unleashed its favorite ruin spell. The invisible blade of force cleaved through the air with a terrifying howl as it flew towards Teresa's thigh. However, it vanished like a fart in the wind before it could even touch her. It was briefly confused, since Cora's attacks were definitely landing. Even now, she clung to the deity's jeweled necklace with one hand while the other three viciously pounded her colossal collarbone. Boxy needed time to figure this out, but it didn't get the chance to do so before Teresa got serious.
That's enough!
The goddess was well and truly done with this farce. What should have been a simple execution of an annoying pest had suddenly turned into a mockery of both her power and her authority. Deciding it was time to put an end to this whole thing, Teresa flexed all of her divine muscles for the first time in a long while. Countless chains of shining gold erupted from the nearby clouds in response to her will. Boxy and Cora evaded and struggled as best they could, but they only lasted for a few seconds each before they were caught. The pair inevitably found themselves bound to a cloud next to each other, their bodies paralyzed by the magical restraints.
You've made a fool of me for the last time!
Teresa bellowed.
I wouldn't put money on that if I were you, dearie.
An eloquent male voice, one undoubtedly belonging to the god of chaos himself, echoed throughout the gilded heavens.
You?
Teresa cried out, her anger laced with surprise.
What are you doing there?
Oh, you know, just thought I'd drop by and see if you wanted any cookies this fine afternoon. What the fuck do you think I'm doing here?
Her eyes darted all over the gold-tinted heavens, but she couldn't find where those words were coming from.
If you've come to save your precious box and your worthless figment, then you're far too late.
Save? Oh! My, how wrong you are. I'm not here to save anyone. Well, technically, I'm not here at all. But that's beside the point. And the point is this. The reason for this house call is that I've come to punish a certain uppity brat for being naughty. Want to take a guess as to who that brat is? I'll give you a hint. It's you.
You seriously think you can barge in here like this? Let's see you punish me when I...
Teresa's face visibly strained as she attempted and failed to eject the foreign presence within her divine domain.
No! Why can't I force you out?
To put it simply, it's because I have my foot in the door.
That crashing sound drew Teresa, Boxy, and Cora's attention towards the red doorway opened by Voidcaller. Normally, the portal-like magic would fade immediately after fulfilling its function, but that particular instance was still there. Not only that, the very air around it was cracked and distorted like broken glass. None of the three had a clue as to what Rupert was trying to do or how he was doing it, but one thing rapidly became clear. The eldest deity in existence was about to demonstrate that said title was hardly just for show.
Now then, Gregory continued in a casual tone. I would show up in person, but seeing as how one of my cute brats is already there, I don't think that'll actually be necessary.
With a terrifying howl and streaks of lime-green light pouring out of it, the door-shaped rift expanded into a 10-meter-wide circle of interdimensional impossibility. A foul stream gushed forth from the Terran reality. The liquid had a glowing red color one would expect from magma, yet its consistency and texture were closer to ink. The mysterious fluid rushed through the air as if flowing through an invisible hose before it splashed against the chained-up demon. Cora roared and thrashed against her bindings as the strange goo seeped into her being. Her screams resonated with the dimensional wound, causing it to shudder violently. Teresa had no idea what was happening, but she knew it couldn't be allowed to continue. She tried to stop it by launching another burst of raw, godly power at the two foreign entities, but the divine smite curved bizarrely around the fiend and her master like a river parted by a boulder. A tense few moments later, both Boxy and Teresa were thrown back by a massive shockwave that originated from Cora's body. The monster's shackles and the deity's divine smite were forcefully dispersed in that same instant, sending the shapeshifter flying uncontrollably through the air until it landed safely on a floating red sofa. The out-of-place piece of furniture clearly wasn't there by chance, given the humanoid-shaped puff of white cloud that was sitting on the other end of it.
Hey, Boxy! Long time no see! It said with a wave. Wordsworth, is that you? In the metaphysical flesh? Meta-whatsicle? Oh, I see. It's like a remote-controlled body. Indeed. I could have made a personal appearance, but thanks to you, I don't have to expend all that effort. Forcing open a link to the beyond from the inside like you did really makes this whole invading a fellow deity thing much easier. Okay. But, shouldn't I be getting out of here? You could. Though I would not recommend it. You'd be missing out on quite the show, after all.
Following Urkel's hand gesture, Boxy's yellow eyes settled upon Cora's new form, which had gone through a number of dramatic changes. The most obvious one was that she was gigantic. The lack of any and all surrounding reference points made it hard to tell exactly how huge her floating body was, but at the very least she was a whole head taller than the dumbfounded Teresa. Furthermore, her demonic armaments, the physical manifestation of a fiend's violent and warlike nature, had undergone a rather drastic transformation. The demon's usual greaves and gauntlets were still there, but they looked heavier, deadlier, and more intricately designed than before. This extended to her newly acquired armor pieces as well. Her upper torso had a form-fitting breastplate instead of a stretchy cloth garment, and a spiked shoulder pad was attached to her front left arm. Four flaps of segmented steel-like plates hung from an armored belt, two of them protecting her outer thighs while the other two dangled between her legs. Her midsection was still as vulnerable as before, but her abs were practically as hard as steel anyway. Besides, it wasn't as if she had any organs, vital or otherwise, beneath those rippling muscles. Fiends' bodies were weird like that. However, Cora's body underwent two key changes that, along with her new demonic armaments, implied she was no longer a mere fiend. She sprouted an extra pair of arms that brought her total to six, and a third jagged horn jutted up from the top of her forehead. Boxy momentarily thought its familiar was replaced with another demon, but a second take made it clear that wasn't the case. Her arguably attractive face, pointy-toothed grin, bright green hair, and vibrant red skin were all there, as was the manic, bloodthirsty glare in her glowing emerald eyes. There was only one plausible explanation for all these changes, which Boxy confirmed by taking a quick glance at its familiar status.
"You made her rank up?"
it asked in disbelief.
"Yup,"
declared Jamal.
"Fiends are a bit too fragile a vessel to contain the kind of output I'm subjecting her to, so I gave her a little push, as it were. So, congratulations, Boxy! You are now the proud owner of an archfiend familiar." "Neat!"
The shapeshifter certainly wasn't going to complain about this development.
"Oh, yeah!"
And judging from the demon's current behavior, she was absolutely loving it. She groaned in satisfaction while flexing and twisting her newly amped up body.
"This feels amazeballs! It's incredible! I feel like I could punch a guy and not only kill him, but also wipe out his entire race! What? What is the meaning of this?"
asked Teresa, completely befuddled by this sudden development.
"Why, it's exactly as I said!"
Gerald answered in a booming voice.
"My lovely assistant here will be administering your punishment for playing too fast and loose with our rules. So, Coralentaprix, my dear?"
"Yeah?"
"Would you kindly slap Teresa's shit for me?"
"All of it?"
"All of it."
"I don't know, Chief. That's a lot of bullshit."
The newly reborn archfiend slammed her left fists into her right palms, eliciting a trio of heavy, dull clangs.
"But I'm sure I can manage."
No sooner did she utter those words than Cora's form vanished. In the next instant, the demon reappeared in front of the indignant goddess, her right fists firmly embedded in the divine woman's torso. Her body caught up with the massive triple impact a split second later and was flung into the distance like a rag doll. Moving once again with speed too fast for even Boxy to follow, Cora reappeared in her flight path and delivered a flying double kick to Teresa's spine, sending her flying downwards like a meteor. The goddess's relatively smaller body collided with what seemed to be thin air, creating a spiderweb pattern of cracks through the boundary of her divine area. Indeed, even if it looked infinite, a god's private space was anything but. So, having crashed so violently into the floor of her own house, the illusion of an endless blue sky shattered, leaving behind a smooth, dull gray surface. Not letting up in the slightest, Cora stomped down on top of Teresa's waist with enough force to send a visible ripple through the border of her pocket reality, further distorting the heavenly illusion around it. The fiend hopped off her victim and reached down to grab her by the left ankle. She then flung the goddess overhead and slammed her face down on the ground with an extremely satisfying thud. Still gripping her leg, Cora proceeded to throw Teresa about at random, smacking her into the ground over and over as if she was using a coin-filled sock to massage a dragon's back.
"Best day ever!"
The extremely elated demon grabbed onto the goddess's 2 feet with all six of her hands. She slammed her into the ground with such force the blonde-haired deity bounced back up to Cora's eye level. The demoness lunged forward and grabbed her newest toy by the neck with one of her left arms and held her up while seemingly trying to choke the life out of her.
"Come on, bitch!"
she shouted.
"I want to hear you scream!"
Teresa, who had remained completely silent ever since the beating started, responded by spitting out a loose tooth which bounced pointlessly off of Cora's middle horn. The defiant glare in her eyes said louder than any words that there was absolutely no way she'd yield with only this much abuse.
Oh, you're feisty,
remarked the fiend with a widening grin.
Good. I like feisty.
Cora worked her over, top to bottom, repeatedly punching her with her five free hands. A series of rapid, dull thuds echoed throughout the area, accompanied by the Archfiend's rolling yells of... But not even a whimper escaped from the goddess herself.
You know, I've been wondering about something regarding that girl,
said Nimoy in a bemused tone.
Oh? What's that?
Asked Boxy, who had reverted to its chest-shaped form in order to make itself more comfortable. The two of them were still floating about on Fergus's sofa, which gave them a superb view of the goddess-turned-punching bag's ongoing punishment.
Why does she do that aura aura thing with her mouth? No idea, answered Boxy. She probably just finds it fun.
Ah, right, of course.
While we're at it, I'd like to ask about something that's been bothering me for a bit.
Not promising any answers, but shoot.
How come Teresa has such massive breasts?
Because she's big,
the god of rounding errors casually pointed out.
I meant proportionally, not just sheer volume.
So did I.
What?
Sorry, I phrased that poorly. I meant it's because she's quite popular.
How does that matter?
Well, for the most part, a deity's appearance is shaped by their followers' beliefs. If a god or goddess looks a specific way, it's because enough people think that that's how they should look. We can alter our shape, of course, but only to an extent. Public opinion has final say on the matter. Sort of a hive mind, subconscious thing, know what I mean?
I think I get that, yeah. Still doesn't answer my question, though. Only makes her bust size stranger, actually.
In what way?
Her clergy practices celibacy, right? Shouldn't that mean she should be more prudish and modest?
Those titanic tits and that indecent outfit seemed like they belonged to a succubus rather than the head of a religion that focused on order, truth, purity, and other such stifling concepts.
No, no, no.
Huey declined with a wave of his celery.
See, it actually has the opposite effect. Think about it. How many of those priests and paladins do you think are pent up?
Now that you mention it, I did once murder a priest of hers because she apparently decided the best place to have anal sex was outside. In a field. At night. Beyond the city's walls.
Boxy's recollection of the event was rather sketchy on the details. It had happened months ago, back when the shapeshifter was still a mimic trying to infiltrate the Mercenary Guild branch in Erosa. At the time, it hadn't really given the odd occurrence much thought, but its present self could see how utilizing the back door might not technically violate an oath of chastity. If enough of Teresa's followers were repressed enough to go down that route, then the slutty appearance of their goddess made sense. However...
Why the large breasts, though?
It insistently asked.
Like, why that part specifically?
Oh, for the love of... Look...
Denny was getting frustrated.
Men, by far, prefer big ones. Most women, on the other hand, either share that preference or don't care either way. There are those that like them small, yes, but they're in the minority. So, when you average it, and add some sexual frustration, or maybe a lot of it, I don't have the exact statistics right now, you end up with, well, that.
That was as reasonable an explanation as the shapeshifter would get. It briefly wondered whether humans were indeed horny enough to make that sort of thing possible, but then it remembered. Succubi were a thing. If the lore gleaned from its demonology skill was to be believed, the conniving seductresses were spawned from the unfulfilled fantasies of desperate perverts. Men were far more lascivious than women, hence why succubi were an exclusively female race of demons. If Teresa was shaped by a similar consensus, then her ridiculously voluptuous appearance made sense. Its nagging curiosity satisfied for the moment, Boxy's mind turned to more pressing issues.
Say,
Marco. Not for nothing. But can I get going now? I have stuff to do and this is getting kind of boring.
Boring? Really?
The man-shaped cloud was taken aback.
Well, yeah. As much as Arms tries, the goddess doesn't seem to care at all.
Indeed, even though Cora's fists pummeled her flesh and pulverized her bones, Teresa remained completely unfazed. Thinking back, the way she yelped when her nose was broken at the start was more out of surprise than pain.
Just seems like a waste of effort, Boxy added.
I suppose you have a point, said Charles. Being both invulnerable and immortal makes it quite difficult to administer corporal punishment. Well, it probably still stings like a bitch, but this beating won't really teach her a lesson.
So then why even bother?
Because I find it quite cathartic, to be honest. It's just satisfying watching that cheating cunt get her comeuppance after all this time. Although, truth be told, even I'm growing a bit bored of this. I suppose I might as well move on to the meat of the matter.
Jerry cleared his throat as he changed to his outdoors voice.
Oh, Coral Enterprix! Sorry to butt in and ruin your fun, but could you be a dear and let me speak with Teresa for a moment?
You got it, Chief!
The fiend stopped pummeling her sandbag of a target and grabbed her from behind, using her multiple limbs to firmly restrain Teresa's arms and hold her in place while Rachel's sofa floated down to her eye level.
Ah, now then. I suppose I should begin administering your punishment for real, eh, Teresa?
Punishment? Don't make me laugh, you impudent wretch!
She responded defiantly.
Oh, I assure you, the chance of you laughing any time soon is very much an absolute zero.
Do your worst, asshat. After that, we'll see how the others feel about you trespassing on my domain.
Tisk, 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 Teresa. Did you just assume I bypassed the other gods and came here without getting their consent first? That's right. They not only know about my being here, but also support this little intervention. I would have been here sooner if I didn't have to pay them a visit first.
The goddess blinked her gigantic blue eyes several times in surprise.
What? Those guys turned their backs on me?
Well, duh. Your little stunts have pissed off quite a few of them, you know. This little war you've allowed to go on certainly hasn't earned you any friends. I mean, Nairi is definitely not a fan of having her followers slaughtered by the thousands, even though you seem to be fine with yours getting the same. Luna's also quite miffed that the war is diverting efforts away from studying and containing the calamity that sort of set it off. Even Axel doesn't condone this senseless conflict, and I'm sure I don't need to explain why Mortimer is pissed at you. As for Solas, Zephira, and Goroth, they're respectively too light-headed, too air-headed, and too thick-headed to give a damn about this whole mess, so they've chosen to abstain from it completely.
Teresa could only glare back in mute silence as she realized none of her fellow deities had stood up for her. There was no chance that Nick made all that up to demoralize her, since the goddess of truth and justice could instantly discern any spoken falsehoods as such.
Don't look at me like that.
Bruce crossed his sheets.
You've got nobody but yourself to blame for your predicament. It was your selfish desire to create a husband that caused all of this in the first place.
The goddess's eyes went wide, and her lip quivered slightly as her secret was suddenly brought to light.
You! How did you find out about that?
Please, sister. You think nobody would notice the last dozen or so heroes you chose are all hunky, blonde, blue-eyed hotthrobs? There are plenty of just and righteous people out there, and yet you always seem to pick men that fit the same type. Then you dote on them relentlessly, doing your darndest to try and keep them safe in the vague hope they'll rank up enough times to stop aging, even though it never works out that way. What you're doing is so obvious that you might as well yell, "I'm looking for a man!" from the mountaintops. I can understand not wanting to bear eternity all by your lonesome. Believe me, I do. But sharing your divine spark with a mortal just to turn him into your ideal man? That's just crazy.
Fuck you, you duplicitous shit!
She spat back.
It's my hero, and I'll do whatever I want with him!
Come on, Teresa!
Whined Lorna in exasperation.
You know that's not how it works! The hero shapes the god just as much as the god shapes the hero. It's a give and take. A two-way partnership, not some weird marital contract. I mean, it's not like your choice of hero this time around was particularly bad or anything. I'll admit, the young lad could have had a very promising future ahead of him, but that should have ended when he died.
You were the one who got him killed in the first place!
So what? A dungeon core meltdown, a wild wyvern, a bandit ambush, a political assassination, a ravenous venereal disease, old age... Something would have gotten him eventually. This time just happened to be sooner rather than later, and that should have been the end of it. But no, you had to go and resurrect the guy. He could have just passed away in peace, but your pathetic attempt to cling to his shattered potential led him down this self-destructive spiral of hatred.
Terry took a deep breath to rein in his tangential rant before speaking in a much more serious tone.
Oh, you knew others were twisting him with lies, and yet you did nothing. You let the lad believe the Empire's cause was just when you were fully aware it was a huge farce. And for what? Just so he could cope with the loss of his friends and family? Don't underestimate mortals, you insufferable twat!
I think you're the one overestimating them,
she argued back.
Without our guidance, those idiots would still be beating each other over the head with sticks like a bunch of animals.
Oh, so beating each other over the head with a bunch of swords and spells is a lot better, is it?
Of course it is! At least there's purpose behind their actions. My flock were outraged at the destruction of Monetol. They demanded justice be carried out, and were presented with a convenient target. So what if some fucking twigs got hurt in the process, so long as my people had closure?
Can you even hear yourself? Is that supposed to be the sort of attitude befitting a deity embodying the concepts of justice and truth?
I am the goddess of truth and justice, so yes, it is!
Ugh, it was a rhetorical question, you vapid bint. Coralentaprix, can you shut her up for a second?
The archfiend in question silently complied, pressing a hand firmly against the goddess's face hole while tightening the grip on her throat with another.
You've changed, Teresa, George continued, his tone solemn. If you were still that headstrong little girl from 2,000 years ago, there was no way you'd stand for a made-up war waged in your name. I mean, we've all inspired a crusade or two in our time. But this shows how far you've strayed from your path. Appeasing your followers has somehow become more important than upholding the core values that you're supposed to embody. That's why your heroes always turn up as failures. That's why I was able to so easily break into your divine area and subvert your control of it. It's also the reason why Coralentaprix here is able to toss you about so easily.
The cloudy representation of Carla visibly drooped its banners and sighed with a puff of smoke.
Face it, Teresa. You're a goddess of truth and justice in title alone. The way you act is more befitting a two-faced noble trying to secure political power, yet you haven't noticed how far you've fallen. Therefore, please understand that what's about to happen next is for your own good. Boris? I don't need to be here for all this, right?
Boxy took advantage of the suddenly quiet atmosphere to reiterate its last question. It was actually in a bit of a rush. Every second it spent up here was a second that its body lay unconscious back in the physical realm, and the creature wanted to get back to it right away. Hopefully, those moronic troops it had eating out of the palm of its hand would take care of Kira. But that was a last resort. The shapeshifter would have already left to take care of matters personally if it had any idea how to do that by its lonesome.
Oh, sorry, Boxy, Otto apologized. Yeah, it's probably best if you got going now. However, I will need to borrow Coralentaprix for this next bit, so she will be unavailable for... a few days? Weeks? Not sure, it'll be a while. Listen, I'll have Carl call you when we're done, okay? Yeah, okay. Also, since a certain someone was so rough in bringing you here, well, it will probably take several hours for you to wake up. Don't worry, though, your corporeal body isn't in any immediate danger. Damn. That's going to be a problem. I'm pretty sure my cover was blown back there. Oh well, I'll salvage it somehow. I'll be alive enough to try, at the very least.
That's one way of looking at it, I suppose.
Thanks for saving me, by the way. I know you didn't necessarily have to.
Oh, well, you're very welcome.
Also, I hope you're not mad about me calling you a worthless piece of shit during the fight.
Ah, don't worry about it. It was all in the heat of the moment. Besides, I'm mostly using you for entertainment purposes, so if anyone has the right to call me that, it's you. Just, don't take that as a free pass to blaspheme all the time, yeah?
But every once in a while is okay.
We all gotta let off steam sometimes, right? The important part is to do so in moderation.
All right, gotcha. I'll keep that in mind.
Jordan then turned towards Teresa, his misty carrot pointing alternatively towards his apparition and Boxy.
See this? This is what a hero-god relationship is supposed to be like. This box... it gets me, you know? No hand-holding, no unreasonable expectations or obligations. Just heroes heroing and gods godding with a pinch of mutual understanding for good measure. Anyway, thanks again for the assist, Boxy. Off you go.
Later, Louie.
The astral projection of the Hero of Chaos disappeared with a remote snap of Danny's paper towels. The goddess of flabbergasting then turned to face the muffled and struggling Teresa.
Now then, time to start your rehabilitation.
Epilogue.
All right, Coral Interprix, Juan called out. It's about time for another detox session, so get your patient ready, will you?
Sure,
came the dispirited response.
Well, you don't seem very cheerful today.
Yeah, not for nothing, Chief. But why did you go ahead and give me all this power if all I'm going to be is a damn nursemaid?
Having so much energy and strength at her fingertips, yet being unable to unleash it, was way more frustrating than Cora initially anticipated. Sure, she had a fun bout of slap the bitch at the start, but ever since Boxy left, the tasks that Bellamy had her perform seemed way too... mundane. This feeling of disappointment was only made worse by the knowledge that Cora's godlike power and stature were very much temporary. Once this whole rehabilitation thing was done, she'd return back to being a regular familiar, meaning her strength would rely entirely on her summoner's power. Sure, she would still be an archfiend like her Uncle Nagi, and would therefore be stronger, faster, tougher, and more versatile than before, but it would be a significant downgrade from her current state. However, becoming powerful enough to easily surpass Nagnamore without Dick's assistance was more or less impossible. Even getting up to the level of the Overlord was out of the question, as that guy had grown and developed his physical, spiritual, and intellectual might over millennia. It would be many centuries before Cora herself could reach such heights, if at all.
Because your charge is a fuck-mothering goddess, answered the god of misfortune. Trust me on this, kiddo. Even if it feels like a waste, there's no such thing as being too careful when dealing with the divines. It's like... how did you so eloquently put it before? There's no kill quite like overkill? Something like that.
Yeah, whatever. I'll just go get the bitch, shall I?
Please do,
said Billy with a nod of his porcupine and a wry smile on his wrist. Cora got off her massive ass and stood up in the seemingly endless white space that was Elmer's divine area. She stretched a bit to limber up her stiff yet bursting with power body. Being forced to temporarily live here felt like a privilege at first, but she quickly realized there wasn't much to do beyond watching the Boxy show alongside Keith. It was even duller than being stuck in the Beyond since she couldn't socialize with other demons, but she had little choice in the matter. She had been promoted to Archfiend, and Henrietta threatened to demote her down to an imp unless she did what she was told. After warming up a bit, Cora disappeared with a rush of air as the Goddess of Uncertainty kept sitting on her sofa, watching her hero. The Titanic Archfiend dashed up, down, and all around the divine area until she located its other temporary resident.
No, 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 no!
Grabbed her by the ankle, then dragged her kicking and screaming back towards Randall. Hearing Teresa wail desperately as she was being manhandled like a sack of old potatoes was pretty fun for the demon at first. but by now her pathetic cries had become an annoyance.
Angela at least gave Cora permission to be as rough as needed with the goddess, which meant it was okay to kick her in the head whenever she felt like it.
Even if this was rehabilitation and for her own good, Teresa still had to pay for disrespecting her divine duties. There was no justice without punishment, after all.
"Here she is, Chief,"
Cora reported.
"No, no,"
the goddess pleaded, her hands clawing desperately at the perfectly smooth floor.
"Isn't it enough? Please, no more. I'm begging you. I can't take it any longer. I need to hear my followers again. I need to. Please."
Step one of Teresa's rehabilitation plan involved, for lack of a better word, godnapping her and quite literally imprisoning her within Jerome's divine area. She'd be cut off completely from the stream of prayers, worship, and offerings that her followers presented her with on a regular basis. Being suddenly cut off like that caused Teresa to enter a state of withdrawal, hence her current pitiable condition. However, this part was absolutely necessary if the core issue at hand was to be resolved.
"Core Lentiprix, is Teresa wearing her robes again?" Dexter asked without even looking back.
"Yep."
The god of probability sighed heavily.
"Well, you know what to do."
The archfiend roughly threw Teresa onto the ground, kicked her lightly to flip her on her back, and then straddled her legs.
"No, no!"
Ignoring her complaints, the red-skinned demon restrained the flailing deity's hands with two of her own, then proceeded to strip her naked with practiced ease. The silky white robe was ripped to shreds while the golden jewelry, sandals, and tiara were roughly taken off and mangled into a big lump, which was then hurled into the distance. A few seconds was all it took to leave Teresa completely naked, curled up into a fetal position, and sobbing uncontrollably.
"I'll say it again, dearie,"
Vanessa yelled without looking away from her screen.
"Those trappings of power do not fit your image at all. How can you hope to be a legitimate beacon of truth without being able to bear yourself fully before others?"
One could argue that the naked truth was meant to be taken figuratively rather than literally, but that was only when it came to simpler, more corporeal creatures. As amalgamations of thoughts, wishes, and ideals, the difference between metaphors and reality was paper thin as far as divine beings were concerned.
"All right, might as well get started. Core Lentiprix, please assume the position."
"Yeah, yeah."
The archfiend picked the sobbing goddess off the ground and dragged her up onto her knees. She forced the naked Teresa to bend over forward while holding her hands behind her back. Cora then stared at one of her right hands for a second, until the demonic gauntlet covering it suddenly split apart and fell off her skin. Doing so made her hand feel a bit itchy, but it couldn't be helped since the armament would get in the way otherwise. Besides, it would grow back on its own soon enough. Finally, she placed her newly bare hand onto the back of the goddess's head and pressed firmly against her flowing gold locks, grasping her skull with her oversized palm. In the meantime, Terence had gotten his creme brulee off the couch and was calmly climbing up an invisible spiral staircase. When he got to the much larger deity's eye level, he stopped going upwards and walked horizontally over thin air as he approached her head.
"Really, Chief? Why not just teleport to the spot like you normally do?"
"Variety is the spice of life, kiddo. If you don't mix up your routine every now and then, you'll grow bored enough you end up going crazy just to liven things up."
He was obviously speaking from personal experience, though the demon couldn't care less.
"Yeah, I suppose,"
she shrugged. Pablo eventually stepped off of his imaginary catwalk and onto the back of Cora's bare hand. He picked what seemed like a good spot and sat his sharks down on her rough red skin.
"I'll be starting now, Teresa."
"No, please don't."
His warning caused the goddess to reflexively struggle, followed by another round of pleading. Fortunately for her, she was not only removed from the source of her divine power, but also had her head, shoulders, and arms firmly restrained by Cora. Too much flailing could disturb the following ritual, which could make matters worse rather than better. It was going to be incredibly unpleasant for her either way, though.
"Sorry about this,"
muttered Casey.
You'll probably thank me later.
In the next instant, the god of mishaps channeled his own divine power through Korra's hand and into the back of Teresa's head while repeatedly chanting a couple of strange words.
Akurio Taisan. Akurio Taisan. Akurio Taisan.
The goddess began choking and gagging in response, which soon turned to dry heaving. And then, after another 20 to 30 seconds, she started to throw up. A viscous black ooze that wriggled unnaturally all on its own fell out of her mouth in thick globs, forming a messy pile on the pure white ground. Gilbert counted a total of 13 lumps of supernatural vomit before he decided to call things off.
Right, that's enough for now, methinks.
He stood up from Korra's backhand and briskly walked off it. With the detox session momentarily finished, the Archfiend threw the pale and extremely weakened goddess off to the side, well away from her leavings. Teresa lacked the strength to do something as demanding as controlling her limbs, so she merely flopped over on her side like a dead fish. If things proceeded as normal, she would get back up in about 5 or 10 minutes and run off somewhere in a delirium. And then, 3 hours later, she would have stabilized enough for another detox session.
So, what do we have this time?
Mused Neil as he stared intently at the haystack-sized pile of god puke.
Lot of hatred in there. It's almost completely filled with hatred, actually. Apart from a bit of pride and some resentment. Bits of jealousy, too.
While it could be said that a believer's devotion, piety, and respect for a god served as the deity's food, not all mortals had happy-go-lucky sentiments towards the divines. Anger, hatred, disappointment, sadness, grief, revenge, desperation, loneliness. Any and all such negative emotions were also transmitted to their deities, though they rarely did so on purpose. If allowed to build up and fester within them, it could lead to the deity in question being poisoned by their influence. That was why Kevin was so adamant about avoiding blaspheme, as expressing disdain towards a god, especially in public, was one of the main sources of thought poisoning. If the thought poisoning got out of hand, it would gradually change a god, twisting them away from their original purpose. The corruption would then trickle down to the deity's most devout followers and adamant supporters, which would in turn infect the population at large and bounce all the way back to the god. It was a downward spiral that, if left unattended, could pervert the deity and the virtues they embodied. And the worst part was that the divine beings themselves wouldn't notice the change until it was too late.
I really should have seen this coming, Alberto chastised himself. That empire's propensity for conflict, bigotry, and treachery coupled with her corrupt clergy should have really tipped me off about her condition sooner.
Indeed, this thought-poisoning phenomenon was one of the main reasons why Teresa had strayed from her path and was slowly but surely turning into a goddess of deception and tyranny.
What?
Korra raised an eyebrow.
You mean she wasn't like that before?
Well, no. She was always an insufferable, stuck-up bitch. But at least she was genuine and trustworthy. It wasn't until about 6 centuries ago that she started skirting the rules and playing favorites with her heroes. But our bumpy relationship kept me from recognizing the signs. If it wasn't for Boxy's people skills, I probably still wouldn't know how far she was gone.
A pained groan escaped Teresa as she gradually lifted her upper half off the floor. She looked about in a drowsy state, her eyes settling on the mass of lumpy black goo on the nearby floor.
Did that come out of me?
Oh? Now this is promising, exclaimed Troy. Finally regained enough of your senses to face your inner demons.
The god of luck snapped his shoes, causing the mass of lumpy black goo to oscillate in response. It steadily shrunk down as it vibrated, compressing itself until it adopted a distinctly feminine humanoid form a little over 2 meters tall. It had shiny brown skin, a massive underbite, 2 rows of beady black eyes, a pair of twin axes in her hands, and bulky, gladiator-like armor covering both shoulders and arms. Her body was extremely well-toned, and her pitch-black hair stood up in a wild mohawk style. Last but not least, A single onyx horn jutted out the left side of her forehead.
Well, outer demons now, I suppose, Jerome smirked.
Was that thing inside me?
Damn. And here I was hoping to be the first one to get all up in that bitch's guts. But I guess someone else beat me to it, huh?
Both Cora and Teresa were shocked by this revelation, albeit in different ways.
I think I misspoke, interjected Stephen. What you saw earlier was the concentrated negativity of mortals, which had attached itself to your being. This child was simply born from that.
As if on cue, the newly created fiend that had been standing upright keeled over and fell on the ground, her limbs twitching slightly against the white surface.
Born?
Asked the giant women in unison.
Yep. What you witnessed just now was the birth of a brand new demonic entity.
Hold on a second there, Chief,
Cora interjected.
Are you telling me all of demonkind started out as god puke?
Of course not. Don't be silly.
Johnny rolled his bananas.
Most of you are born from the residual sinister thoughts of mortals that get caught by the beyond well before they could reach and infect a deity. Most of those thoughts don't even come from people, but from monsters. I mean, the whole point of that place is to serve as a lightning rod for that stuff. A filter, if you will.
So, what? We just randomly pop up out of thin air?
More or less. You probably don't want to hear this, but the fact that demons exist at all is something of an accident. I never intended for consciousness to flourish in that cesspit I created, and yet here you are, defying all logic and spitting right in the face of my divine design. The mind-boggling fact that all of you brats even exist is the whole reason why I'm so proud of you.
Oh. Thanks, I guess? What about me, though?
What about you?
I mean, do you know where specifically I came from?
I can't be sure. But if I had to take an educated guess based on your appearance, you're probably the result of the Elven Dominion's collapse. More specifically, the hatred and anger that subsequent generations of Elven slaves felt towards their human masters. And given your womanly disposition, I'm guessing it was mostly female sex slaves.
What? Really?
Yep. Your age fits. It would also explain those predominantly elfin ears and attractive features. Not to mention why you're considerably more, intellectually challenged than your average fiend. I can't imagine corrupt scumbags demanding that their toys be intelligent. Quite the opposite, actually.
Huh. I guess that does make sense. I always wondered why I got an unexpected boner from flattening those slavers while the boss was looking for a lair.
Yes, quite. Well, I better send this child on her way so she can learn how to demon properly.
A bright red portal suddenly opened up underneath the newborn demon's limp body, depositing her into the beyond well before she even gained awareness. Normally, he sent the god puke there directly, but this time around he felt it necessary to demonstrate that gods were not as infallible as a certain someone seemed to think.
So, Teresa, you've been awfully quiet.
I had no idea. Do the others have to deal with all this as well?
Let's just say you aren't the first to have your judgment clouded by thought poisoning. The Beyond typically does a good job of keeping you a lot from getting off the rails, but you're definitely a special case. Seems like your default nature just makes you more susceptible to that sort of thing, and your rash actions only made things worse. I mean, do you understand what repercussions resurrecting your hero even had?
It was perceived as a miracle, wasn't it? I mean, so many people rallied behind him, and...
The goddess paused for a few seconds, seemingly lost in thought.
I gave a bunch of bad people a very convenient pawn, didn't I, Norwell?
Yup. If it wasn't for the hero's testimony and heavily publicized grief, then this war wouldn't have happened and your condition wouldn't have gotten worse. It goes beyond that, though. How many thousands of people do you think cursed your name while thinking, why him and not my husband? or some such envious notion.
I see. It seems I have a lot to think about. Excuse me.
The goddess rose to her shaky feet and slowly walked off into the distance. Jimmy gave an approving nod of his frying pan and parked his beehive on the sofa. Meanwhile, Cora laid her massive self down behind him to get a good view of the screen the boxy show was on.
So, how long until the bitch is healed and I get to get out of here?
She asked after a few minutes.
Hard to say. Detoxing her is the easy part and should be over with in another 2 days or so, after which I can move on to step 3.
Why not just yank all the demons out of her in one go?
Romney's detox method put a lot of strain on Teresa's divine spark, the manifestation of her followers' combined faith and the equivalent to her soul. And while it couldn't be truly destroyed so long as people worshipped her and all she stood for, ripping all the corruption out by force could have serious repercussions if handled poorly. Teresa could potentially go mad, lose her memories, or become a completely different divine being altogether. Worst case scenario, she might be unable to reestablish the bond with her divine area and be rendered completely powerless, leaving her substantial following in turmoil.
Because there's a right and a wrong way to go about things.
However, such an explanation would have probably gone way over Cora's head, so he simplified it for her benefit.
Okay. But do you seriously need me here to do it? You can probably keep her from acting up without me, right?
No. Your presence here is very much instrumental. You do realize you demons are the only ones with the power to mess with divine beings on a spiritual level, right? Why do you think demonkind has things like a hierarchy and a military to begin with? It's so that you can be used to directly oppose a god should they become a danger to the world.
So we're god killers?
Sure, why not?
Nice!
Friedrich just couldn't bring himself to correct Cora's misunderstanding after seeing her face so full of excitement and expectation. He still thought of demons as his children and grandchildren, so he was understandably a bit soft on them. A feeling which, for the most part, they returned, as all demons treated him with the respect and adoration a father deserves. It was also why Zeratul found it so difficult to tell any of them why he knew such countermeasures were necessary. There used to be a time when Michael didn't have a righteous goddess of truth and justice to keep him honest. A time when he was still a god of order on a world far removed from Terrania. A place that didn't have god killers to stop him, and as a result had so much order inflicted on it that it was left as a barren, lifeless rock. No child should have to think about taking up arms against their own parent, so the elder deity kept a firm seal on that secret. All things considered, Kyle was quite thankful his unwitting savior started responding more positively to the ongoing rehabilitation. By the time phase 2 of the program was complete, she was behaving much more reasonably. She no longer thrashed about wildly and willingly accepted whatever aid was given to her. She stopped recreating her garments and was getting used to going around completely naked, proving she took the God of Uncertainty's words to heart. She even started blindfolding herself as an embodiment of the notion that justice was blind. The strip of black cloth didn't actually block her eyesight, but the symbolism was the important part. However, as expected, she had difficulty completing step 3. Letting go of her more questionable convictions to once again become a pure goddess was easier said than done. The detox sessions helped, but she needed to completely reject her treacherous side and once again embrace truth and justice with her whole being. If not, then she would end up relapsing within a year. Therefore, until her own divine area reached out and connected to her while inside Yuri's place, she wouldn't be allowed to resume her duties. Progress was steadily being made as Teresa displayed more and more of the characteristics Nigel remembered from before. On the 8th day of her rehabilitation, however, the god of unforeseen consequences ran into an obstacle that really rustled his jimmies.
"Myself, damn it, Teresa!"
he yelled.
"How many times do I need to say this? You can't play favorites with your hero like that!"
"Why not?"
insisted the naked, blindfolded goddess.
"I already swore on my own name I would not coddle them in an overprotective manner."
She had already proven that she had completely given up on spreading lies, either by speaking them or by withholding the truth. meaning that wasn't just some boast, but her true, honest intentions. However, they weren't enough.
That's not the point. You can't just pick and choose which parts of the process you want to adhere to. Heroes need to be chosen primarily on ability, potential, and strength of character. Looks, gender, or race should not be the defining factor.
And this coming from a spinning eggplant who chose a shapeshifter as their hero? Don't think I've forgotten you have a soft spot for their ilk.
Look, this and that are completely unrelated.
Uh-huh. You do know my bullshit detector still works, right?
Oh, for the love of... Look, I chose my hero by picking a creature that showed extraordinary potential to bring about change in the world. It's just that Boxy coincidentally happens to be a talented shapeshifter.
Then all heroes of the hammer just coincidentally happen to be blonde, blue-eyed, human boys.
Taylor leaned back into her sofa cushion with another groan while Teresa stood indignantly opposite him. Technically, their size difference meant she was more above than in front of him, but that was beside the point. The still supersized Cora lazed about nearby. Not only was she completely and utterly bored out of her skull, but she also grew increasingly annoyed at this never-ending quarrel. Holstein told her to keep her thick head out of this part of the rehabilitation, but there was only so much endless bitching she could tolerate. Therefore, the Archfiend decided to bypass any sense of good judgment and injected herself into the conversation with as much style and finesse as a boulder crashing into a greenhouse.
Chief!
She called out.
Remind me again why bitch tits over there are so stuck on pretty boys.
I have a name, creature!
Complained the goddess.
You will address me by it or not at all!
She has it stuck in her head that she needs a husband,
explained Fargo while marvelously ignoring bitch tits.
And according to her, the best way to find one is through the hero system.
Right,
said Cora with a grimace.
Can't I just stick it in her pooper instead?
Cora Lentiprix, we've been over this. That is not going to help, especially not when she's in such a volatile state.
Well, it was worth a shot,
the demon shrugged.
I'm sorry, but what does she mean by stick it in her pooper?
Asked Teresa suddenly.
She means anal sex, Teresa. What else could she possibly mean? No, wait, don't answer that.
The goddess craned her neck sideways and crossed her arms in confusion.
But that doesn't make any sense. Is she talking about fisting or something?
I said don't answer that!
No, you dumb twat!
Shouted Cora while standing up.
I'm talking about my dick!
What?
Grunting in frustration, the demon rose to her feet, lifted up the front tail of her armored kilt, let her fully erect member flop out of her body, and pointed to it with four of her hands.
This! Oh my!
Exclaimed Teresa, while covering her blushing cheeks with her hands.
I had no idea. You, certainly have an impressive set there.
She clearly had no idea that female fiends were also packing down there, and the revelation was made all the more shocking by Cora's clearly aroused state. Her raging lust was a natural result of the demon staring at and rubbing against the goddess's naked, womanly body for a week straight. Between that and the inability to exercise her Pierre-given might, she was so frustrated that she felt she could burst at any moment. In more ways than one.
Wait, what do you mean, sit?
The demon muttered in confusion. She then looked down at her genital situation for the first time since her rank up.
Oh! No wonder I felt a bit weird down there.
It would appear her promotion to Archfiend had actually given her not one, but two extra horns. One on her head, and another between her legs. Indeed, standing at full mast and lightly pulsing with pent-up lust was a duet of throbbing rods. The demon gently poked her newly discovered genitalia with a finger, causing her to shudder a bit.
Damn, son!
She exclaimed.
Chief, you gotta let me try these puppies out. Please, let me boink the bitch. Like, for real, I'm begging you here.
For the last time, roared Dilbert,
This vulgarity will not—
Jasper?
Teresa's sudden interruption cut off the god of randomness before he went into full-on nagging mode.
I'm not supposed to lie anymore, so can I just say that, well, I wouldn't be, entirely opposed to that.
You're kidding me, muttered Nicolay.
See, Chief? She's up for it, too.
No, this is idiotic.
I mean, not for nothing, Chief, but weren't you the one that kept saying she just needs to get laid?
I was just...
He sighed, then looked back at the fidgeting goddess.
You're sure you want to go through with this?
Blushing with an intense red that gave Cora's crimson complexion a run for her money, Teresa nodded twice in response. Ivan began huffing, puffing, murmuring, and even sprinkled his donuts a few times as he actually considered it. He posited that, perhaps, the best way to address his patient's stubbornness regarding her hero criteria was to alleviate the core issue. Namely, the repressed sexuality of her entire religion. He still had serious doubts about this moronically direct approach, but he had to try something.
If this works, I am literally going to lose my shit, he mumbled to himself.
Fine! Have at it!
Exactly 11 hours, 42 minutes, and 25 seconds later, every paladin, priest, and monk of chaos in existence suddenly and simultaneously defecated in their respective undergarments.
You have been listening to Teresa, Everybody Loves Large Chests, written by Neven Iliev. What? Where's the music? We waited this long to get the audio for Teresa, and we don't have tasty credits music to go with. Oh.
See? Tasty. I know Sound Booth Theater could take a long time to get things done, but they keep making my audiobooks shinier and shinier and shinier.
These are not unnecessary things! Don't worry. Mortimer, my sixth book, is already being narrated. So go to soundbooththeater.com to look at the rest of the shiny books they have in store, and keep sending emails asking when Mortimer will be out if you get impatient. They told me they hate that. Anyway, Teresa, Everybody Loves Large Chests, Volume 5, written by Neven Iliev, narrated by Jeff Hayes, featuring Justin Thomas James as Reggie, and Annie Ellicott as Kira, Claus, Teresa, and other supporting characters. Music by Aaron J. Morton. Sound design by Ahmed Mahmoud, Jeff Hayes, and Aaron J. Morton. Proofing by William Letson. Editing and mastering by Augustine Jacob. Text copyright 2020 by Neven Iliev. Production copyright 2021 by Sound Booth Theater. A Sound Booth Theater production. Facebook groups are useful for finding tasty audio. For more Gamelit or Lit RPG audio, visit the Gamelit Society group. For more from Sound Booth Theater, visit the Sound Booth Theater Live group. Or, if you want to support the author directly, search for Neven Iliev on Patreon, where you can find his newest series, Ursus Ex Machina.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.